final speaker is going to be Dr. Miller. Vanessa Miller is an advanced practice registered nurse and a doctor of public health. She is a health policy researcher and currently works as an assistant professor in the School of Nursing at California State University, Fullerton. She is a member of APHA Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drugs section. She is also a member of the APHA Action Board and works with the Policy Committee to ensure significant research findings are disseminated to Congress and various policymakers to promote the funding and support for the evidence-based practice. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Miller.
Thanks, Amy. And I'd also like to thank the Maternal Child Health section for putting on this session, and also their collaborative spirit with all of the other APHA sections. As you'll notice in your conference book, Maternal Child Health really loves to collaborate. So we're very grateful for that. I have no disclosures. Hopefully, after I finish this session, you can see the objectives, but this is the one time that I'm giving a presentation where I am hoping that I raise more questions than I answer. So what is the problem here? Infant deaths at less than 28 days, you can see the numbers here. I will draw your attention to the blue bar, which represents black or African-American infants. We have white, non-Hispanic infants represented by the burgundy or the gold bar or the red bar, and then Hispanic births represented by the green bar. Infant deaths at 28 days to 11 months. Again, I draw your attention to the trend of the blue bar. And infant deaths at less than 1 year. Once again, the trend continues with African-American deaths being higher than all other races in all categories. So what is the problem that we have here? Our first presenter indicated that African Americans suffered at a rate of 2 to 1 in terms of adverse birth outcomes. But we also have data that shows that black babies are 4 times as likely to die of complications related to low birth weight. So taking a look at that, this presentation comes from 5 years of evaluation data. We have tons and tons of quantitative data, qualitative data, and just a lot of other stuff that we looked at to put this presentation together. We also looked at policy analysis, with the major policies being maternal child health policies, and we also looked at immigration policies. The data for this presentation comes from community maternal child health programs located in Texas, California, Arizona, and New Mexico. So you'll notice that these are all border states. The population that we're looking at are African Americans and Mexicans who are. We have two groups of Mexicans that we looked at. One group was very comfortable with the English language. They had been in America quite some time and preferred to speak English as opposed to Spanish. And then our other group was a Spanish-speaking Mexican group of women. We used system science. We decided that we're doing a lot throughout this conference. You're going to see many, many presentations that tell you all the things that are being done to get a handle on this low birth weight and fetal death disparity. So we looked at all of that, and then we decided that this issue was so complicated until traditional approaches were not going to help. So we used what we call system science. Some of you may be familiar with that, but basically you're looking at everything. You just throw everything into the hat. You draw a bunch of arrows to see what's going where and why it's going there, and you take a look at it. Logic modeling is something that's used quite a bit in program evaluation. We use community-based participatory strategies, and I'm going to talk primarily about focus groups. We looked at program outcomes, and we looked at program processes. Policy resistance is a term that is beginning to be used more and more in the health sciences to deal with these very, very complex issues. Maternal child and immigration, I don't think anybody would deny that those are extremely complex issues in our world today. Using system science to look at these complex systems, as you may know, complex systems are very dynamic. Think about maternal child, think about immigration. Dynamic, they're tightly coupled. They're governed by feedback. They are nonlinear, self-organizing, adaptive, and continuously evolving. I compare them to what would happen if you stepped into a moving river. You can never step into the same place twice. The water is constantly moving, constantly evolving, and your position in the river is always changing. So after we took all of this data and we looked at it, we kind of felt like cold case detectives sitting around with all of this data and trying to make some sense of it and see what was happening here. We looked at maternal child health policy, and the first thing we found out was that prior to 1980, maternal child health policy was just a mess. The constructs were poorly defined, poorly organized, and a lot of the information we needed in terms of African Americans, that data was not collected prior to 1980. In 1980, most of maternal child health services for our population fell into the category of AFDC, which, as some of you may remember, was aid to families with dependent children. In 1980, we started taking a closer look, and we began to notice this disparity in birth outcomes, particularly with African American infants. And we attributed that disparity to access to early prenatal care. So once we identified the problem, naturally we jumped right on it and tried to correct it. So in 1989, we added a couple of more things to that mix. We added case management and we added health education. Now surely with all of that, we would get some good outcomes. 1996, people began to protest about all the money they were spending in this area. And we had the Personal Responsibility Act, which many of you may remember as welfare reform. Then in 1997, we added more resources to the mix with the Children's Health Insurance Program. Now, what does all of this amount to? Again, a lot more money with not the results that we anticipated. Between 1985, when we really began to aggressively attack this issue, and 1998, the expenditures in Medicaid more than doubled. And as you know, many of these services that I'm going to discuss are paid for with Medicaid funding. So there goes a maternal child health policy. What does immigration policy have to do with all of this? In the states that I'm talking about, immigration policy and maternal child health services are competing for scarce dollars. There's not a community maternal child health agency in America that I can think of that I'm proud to say who would deny any mother services regardless of her immigration status. So in some of these border states, you have wonderful programs, but there's a competition for scarce dollars. So we looked at immigration policy. I do not have enough time, even though I have a little extra time, because one of our speakers is not here, but we all know about the immigration of African Americans to the United States, so I won't spend a lot of time on that. But let's spend a little bit more time on Mexican American immigration policy. Over the next few months to years, this is going to become an issue in each of your lives. Each of you will have to make a decision about where you stand on immigration policy. And if you make that decision, I would like for it to be an informed decision. I spent most of my life in Texas and California and border states, and prior to doing this, I will admit that I was very ignorant about a lot of things related to immigration policy. Mexican-American immigration occurred in three phases. The first phase was in the late 1800s to 1930, where we had a lot of immigration to meet the labor needs of U.S. railroads and mining, as well as oil interests. Then the phase two was 1942 to 1964. This phase is known of as the Bracero era. This is a guest worker program. Guest worker programs have reemerged in terms of congressional dialogue to deal with the immigration policy. Once again, I don't have time to elaborate on this era. I will speak more about it, and I will also leave you some resources where you can go and look at this program. The Bracero era was a guest worker program between the United States and Mexico. It was designed to help meet the agricultural needs and the needs of the railroad, as well as other U.S. work shortage areas created by World War II. 4 million Mexican men participated in this program. I show you this image here to show you some of the degrading and humiliating things that occurred during the Bracero era. These 4 million men had to undergo strenuous physical examinations. This image is very prevalent because the people that you see performing these physical examinations are members of the U.S. Public Health Service. Phase three is where we are now, 1980 to the present. Some of you may not remember NAFTA, or may not understand, you know, you're too young. I can just tell you were too young to understand all the stuff that went down when NAFTA first came out. I draw it back to your attention. At this meeting, we have several sessions related to trade. Trade agreements and things like that is something that U.S. public sometimes has a tendency to stray away from. As a result of NAFTA, the small farmers in Mexico, independent business owners, were replaced by corporations. So I coined this term. This is the Walmartization of Mexico. As a result of all of this, we now currently have approximately 2 million undocumented Mexican Americans in the United States. And once again, I only mention this because in the realm of maternal child health, an undocumented mother is the same as a documented mother in terms of us workers. We're not going to turn a mother away regardless of her status if she requires our services. So some of the things that we looked at to try to get a handle on what was happening, we know that there are gross disparities in terms of African-American birth outcomes and Spanish or Latino birth outcomes. So we looked at entry into prenatal care. We know that the sooner women get into prenatal care, the better their birth outcomes are going to be. Since it was decided between 1980 and 1989 that case management was an important component, then we also looked at case management services. We looked at the efforts that were involved in terms of getting these women to enroll in community-based programs. And then we also looked at cultural factors. And all of this was information that we gathered from a total of 6 focus groups that were conducted over a 2-year period. We had no time limits on these focus groups. We spoke with these women. Each group, we spoke with them an average of 3 hours. So we had tons and tons of qualitative information. Some of the demographics that are relevant to this presentation, you can see in terms of our group, the AA, of course, is the African American. And throughout this presentation, I will use E as terms the Mexicans who were very comfortable speaking English, and the S is the Spanish-speaking group. You'll notice our N's are not huge. Again, this is more qualitative, and we were more interested in the quality of information versus the sample size. You will notice that unemployment is a problem. These women, despite being in the maternal child health system for quite some time, were pregnancy spacing is emphasized. We'd like the women to wait at least 2 years before they have another child, but this was not happening. Most of the women that we had averaged about 2 children. The age here is somewhat misleading. We had a 37-year-old outlier who messed up our age stuff. And then over here we had a 34-year-old outlier. who messed up age. So if you take out those outliers, the age in these two groups drops. This age becomes 16 versus 18, and this becomes more comparable to the mean age of the African American group. You'll notice the absence of a partner, and we were looking specifically at a male partner or someone who could donate sperm, because we're looking at children here and we're looking at reproduction. So we were looking primarily at males. Education was a problem, as well as employment. So I'm going to move quickly through these slides. I don't expect you to be able to read everything here as I move quickly through them, but I'm going to try to summarize. This is the focus group data that we had. We spent a lot of time on prenatal care, since prenatal care is the major thing that we have identified in terms of controlling birth outcomes. We spent a lot of time talking to these ladies about prenatal care. All groups understood very well what prenatal care was. They verbalized in their words what they thought prenatal care. Something we found very interesting, though, was in this group, when we talked about prenatal care, they emphasized time and time again that, in their opinion, good prenatal care meant that you don't let your husband hit you when you are pregnant. We looked at all of the women felt like prenatal care was important, and all of them indicate an understanding of why it was important. When we asked, once again, if it was possible to have a healthy baby without prenatal care, both of the Mexican groups said that it was possible, but they emphasized it's very important. If you're not going to have prenatal care, you need to have a social support system and you need to have education. African American women did not indicate that. They said it's a big risk, you know. You can do it, but it's a big risk. When they found out they were pregnant, we had a prolonged conversation about this. And to sum up this slide, what it boiled down to, these women were depending on natural signs like cessation of their menstrual period, nausea and vomiting, and things like this, the natural signs that we associate with pregnancy. And, of course, those natural signs were unreliable. Dependence on those signs led to a delay in prenatal care, a delay as long as 5 months for some of these women. And we need to understand that these women, their pregnancy is being paid for by Medicaid and other public funding. So it's not just a matter of when you find out you're pregnant, then you go to the doctor. When they found out they were pregnant, then they had to go through all this administrative maze to become eligible for services. So they had to do the paperwork, they had to wait for appointments, and all of the other administrative stuff that was required for them to get their appointment. Then we asked them about case management, which was also a very important thing. We decided in 1989. We found dissatisfaction with case management decreasing as we go up. The Spanish-speaking group, very, very satisfied with case management. The English-speaking Mexican group, a little bit less satisfied with case management. And the African-American group, very unsatisfied, very dissatisfied with case management. We asked them about how they found out about the community program in which they were participating in. Word of mouth was the primary way, and then women, infant, and children was the other way. We did not get any response from any of the women that they found out about the service directly through efforts from the community service provider. So what does all this mean? The African-American women were very uncomfortable with case management because they felt that it was too intrusive. Some of you may know that in order to enroll in these programs, the amount of paperwork is tremendous. The case managers would spend hours in the home trying to get these documents completed. The Spanish group liked this. They enjoyed the education. They enjoyed the dialogue, the camaraderie, and all of that. But once again, it decreased. African Americans, aversion to breastfeeding. You don't have to, aversion to it. We didn't have to guess. They did not want to do it. The Mexican group did not want to do it. The Spanish-speaking group felt like it was their duty to breastfeed as long as possible. African-American group and the English-speaking Spanish group freely admitted to drug use during pregnancy. The Spanish-speaking group had an aversion to drug use, and we didn't have a single one that admitted to any kind of drug use during pregnancy. What we found in the African-American group was a long-term desire for employment and expressions of frustration and dissatisfaction with their health care provider. The English-speaking group, desire for unemployment and education. The Spanish-speaking group, satisfaction with the system, especially case management. What does all this boil down to? All three groups are receiving late prenatal care. That means that, and what I mean by that is that they were receiving prenatal care at the very end. If they were lucky, they were receiving prenatal care at the very end of the first trimester, and most of the time it was in the second trimester or later. There was very poor communication between the participants and their physician. They were not, in all groups, they were not receiving any useful information from their physician. All of their information was coming from the case managers. So after we looked at all of this, we said, well, maybe these women are having some self-esteem issues or some empowerment issues. So in our last three focus groups, after we looked at the first three, and we tried to stick with the same script for all six groups, but in our last three set of focus groups, we did add this empowerment issue and to see if there was some problem with self-esteem. I won't read this whole slide. I think all of you can read that, and it'll save time if I don't. But we used the empowerment tool by Kamita and Shamita. This is a sample of the tool. Very simple. We use these few questions here, and the women just check yes or no. I will say that the Spanish-speaking group, everything was done in Spanish, and including this tool. It was translated to Spanish. Now, with an N of 5, you know, we can't make generalizations or inferences, but it did kind of make us think about some things, and one of the things that we looked at most was their ability to problem solve. Most of the time, we got good concrete numbers, but when we looked at the African-American, their ability to problem solve and really seek information independently, there were some issues there and some issue with their confidence in terms of being able to be a good mother. In terms of the English-speaking group, once again, we found information, education, lack of educational resources was an issue, but other than that, they were very confident in their ability to be good parents. And then in the Spanish-speaking group, this is where we found the most variability. But once again, they needed more information. There was a little bit of discomfort about their ability to be a good mother. So as I said, this presentation is designed to raise more questions than answer, but this gave us something to think about, and we feel like that many care providers should not only just look at the qualitative stuff, but look at how these women feel inside and look at empowerment. There's a lot of good data regarding empowerment as probably one of the rationales for the poor birth outcomes in terms of African Americans. Then we looked at the program itself. We looked at the process of the program. And what we found was that there were frequent staff changes in these programs. Most of the time it was related to salary or other administrative issues. There was an inability to recruit qualified African American staff in key positions. All of the case managers were either Caucasian or Latino or Latina. We did not have any long-term African American case managers. There was, again, a conflict between local mandates and federal mandates, primarily in regards to immigration policy. And then there were poorly defined federal constructs. The federal government would have the programs to collect all of this data, about various things, and I'll use one example as referral. And the federal government in one of the programs requires that the program measure completed referrals, using that term, completed. And programs were confused about what does that mean. Does that mean when the woman goes and gets the service and comes back, is that a completed referral? Does it mean when I give them the information to go? So just this was just one example, but there were many times when we found that the programs had a poor understanding of what MCHB wanted in terms of data collection. We found, having poorly defined constructs led to inconsistent data collection tools, which led us to question the reliability and validity of those tools, insufficient funding. There was mandated screening, but then there was no money for intervention and many times no service provider for intervention. As I indicated before, Medicaid was having a great deal of problems. The Medicaid providers were having a great problems collaborating with physicians, and MCHB requires collaboration with community service providers, but because of the frequent staff changes, collaboration was very difficult. The programs would set up with a collaborator and have a good working relationship. Then a few months later, that person would have quit or moved into another position, and then they'd have to start all over. So in terms of outcomes, the programs are still being funded, so they are meeting their goals in terms of frequency data. Most of the time, MCHB collects a lot of frequency data. How many of this? How much of that? How many low birth weight infants are you having? So they were meeting their goal in terms of frequency data. But then when we start digging back into our cold case files, we found out that sometimes the methods they were using to meet these outcomes were not very good. If they felt that they would not meet their goal for low birth weight infants, then they would stop recruiting high-risk mothers. And this came out in the focus groups also. The women talked about how they knew other women who were not able to get into the program for various reasons. So we found that this was interesting. If you hold a program to just meeting the qualitative goals of frequency data, then they can meet those goals most of the time. But the methods used to meet those goals may be questionable. So as a result of this, we have continued failure. As our first presenter has said, and you'll hear throughout this conference, we are continuing to fail to meet the Healthy People goal related to African American low birth weight. We are failing to meet our federal and state immigration goals, and we have a major strain on the maternal child health system, despite all the money we're putting into the system and despite the double-digit numbers in Medicaid. And once again, over the next few months, many of you will have to make decisions about this in terms of your local and your state government officials. So what do we recommend as a result of all of this work? What we're doing now is not working, okay? So after our dialogue with these women, we decided that should we not invest in a more eco-social framework where these women are connected, we are providing resources, and these women feel connected to their community, these women feel empowered. As I indicated before, a lot of these women were not educated, but education was something that was important to them, as indicated throughout various things. We looked at another recommendation that we would make would be the reintegration of men of color into the maternal child health system. Since AFDC, before 1980, women of color have felt like if they reveal a connection or a tie with a male, if there is a male in the home, if there is a male who is contributing to the income of the home, then the services will be decreased or denied. There are programs now that are independently forming for males, but the programs that we looked at were geared directly for females. So should we not change maternal child health into family child health and reintegrate men of color into the system and not make these women feel ashamed that they are associated with a male. And the reason why we say this is that most of the information that we have comes from animals. Pure science begins with animals. All of the wonderful drugs and medications that we benefit from, the research began with animals. So what have we learned from elephants in terms of maternal child health? Young male elephants often follow older, sexually active males around, appearing to study what they do. When these role models were removed, young male elephants became aggressive. They began to kill rhinos, and in some cases, they were even found to be trying to mount or have sex with rhinos. So this was attributed to a breakdown in the social system, loss of the older elephants due to the ivory trade, and in some cases, when we tried to do something really wonderful and save the elephants by transporting them to another location, at that time we did not have the equipment that would move the larger animals. So we took the babies, and so we had all of these babies here with no male influences. So as a result of that, one of the recommendations that we're making, I can't get to the internet, but that's okay. Y'all can upload this. Go to this site. It's a wonderful site. And this is the site that I indicated that you would find more information about the Bracero program. And again, if you're very young and you don't remember that program, I would recommend that you look at it. So the Bracero program had 4 million men in that program. Some of the men were paid as little as $0 a week, to as much as $12 a week. So needless to say, I think these 4 million men have some back pay due. So for that back pay, I would recommend, instead of braceros, which means men who works with their arm and their back, and sometimes we call it stoop labor. Instead of men who work with their arms or back, I would ask you to consider over the next few months or week when the immigration is debated across the United States, think about those 4 million men and their back pay. At the present time, we have 2 million students, and I work with a lot of them, who came over as a part of those three waves of immigration, brought over by their parents. They had no say in it. We are talking about children. They had no say in it. They went through the entire U.S. education system because of the discrepancy between state immigration policies, federal immigration policy. They have high school education. In some cases, they have a college education, but they cannot get a job because they are undocumented. So we have 2 million of those who are depending on $4 million of back pay. I don't know how the law stands right now, but it's called the DREAM Act, and there's all kind of little ugly stuff in it. So I'm not advocating the DREAM Act, but I am saying that we should consider that we have a lot of educated people, and we need to create, look at cerebral people who think with their brain and their mind versus bracero, if we could support that with their hands and backs. So I have some references here, and thank you all very much, and thank Maternal Child Health.